Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everybody, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review is in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, a smattering of bad, and a crazy martini for conservatives today. And Ian, for the good martini, we hop to the other side of the pond and learn that, in fact, the British people have decided to Brexit. They have decided to leave the European Union. It was a riveting vote count last night that lasted well into the early morning hours on the east coast of the United States. So it was clearly a bleary-eyed night and morning for the folks over in Britain. But in the end, the seesaw ended up on the side of leave, which shocked the BBC, which shocked a lot of politicians, including Prime Minister David Cameron, who says he will resign because he is not the person to oversee this transition away from the European Union. So a lot of different opinions, a lot of different people happy today. Certainly those who love freedom should be happy when realizing that Britain and everybody else's involvement in the European Union essentially gives this other body the power to decide whether or not the laws that you pass in your own country are allowed to go forward. Just a ridiculous amount of control that the EU has on its member states, and to move away from that type of really tyranny in some ways is a great step.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's extraordinary news. You know, usually when I'm on, the good martinis are the least bad martinis, but today this is absolutely a great one. It's nothing short of an historic event. As you point out, it really boils down to the question of sovereignty and democratic control. 52% of British voters, about 17 million people of the 33 million who cast a vote, said that they were, in effect, tired of having their lawmaking process outsourced to Brussels, which is effectively what's happened over the past, you know, decade plus. Those elites, including not only in Brussels, but among the party leadership, the Conservative Party leadership, the Lib Dems and Labour leaders, were all against Brexit. The voters were saying, look, we're tired of being ignored. Obviously, it raises serious questions, you know, going forward about what the logistics of actually exiting the European Union look like. This is going to be a long-term process. There's going to be a hangover period, too. You know, obviously, you're seeing the pound at a low right now because of all the economic uncertainty and the rest. I should say these are, you know, very real concerns that are going to have to be dealt with in a thoughtful way by leadership. We're only really at the beginning of this process, but it's an extraordinary moment and a very promising one because it effectively opens up the future of Europe and what that future might look like. And it doesn't have to be this technocratic, elite-run, outsourced operation that's created so many problems over the past two decades. It can be something different entirely, and that's a promising step.
Absolutely. And Charlie Cook over at National Review, who, for folks who don't know, was born and raised in Britain, has an excellent story on this today about the vote being just the beginning and what comes next. And Ian, you've explained that very well. Also, he says that as during the general election of 2015, and that means over in Britain, Pollyannaism was on full display throughout the proceedings. Announcing the result last night, most of the TV anchors and pundits looked genuinely shocked. How, they seem to ask, could the polls have been so wrong again? After all, nobody in a position of national influence seemed to know anybody who was voting leave. And then he talked about how the blue-collar areas and a lot of right-center areas just went heavy, heavy, heavy for leave. And that ultimately was able to make up for Scotland and London, certainly, which still tilted towards remaining. Just as one little exit note here, so fun for Donald Trump. He's over in Scotland at an event with his golf course right now, and he tried to take advantage of the result by saying, hey, look what's happening in England. This is what's going to happen in America, too. We're taking our country back. But here's his tweet. Just arrived in Scotland. Place is going wild over the vote. They took their country back, just like we will take America back. No games. Yeah, Scotland went about 60-plus for Remain. So little bit slow on getting the data from certain parts of the country. His later statements seem to have a better grasp of that, but the original tweet made me smile.
Donald gets his news from the shows. The shows hadn't been on yet. It was early, so got to cut him some slack on that.
All right, on to the bad now. And this is a triple-headed bad. This is all Hillary Clinton-related news. Two of it relates to her ongoing investigation. One, an Associated Press review of the official calendar Hillary Clinton kept as Secretary of State identified at least 75 meetings with longtime political donors, loyalists, Clinton Foundation contributors, and corporate and other outside interests that were not recorded or were listed without the names of those she met. The missing entries raised new questions about how Clinton and her inner circle handled government records documenting her State Department tenure. Here's another one. Former Secretary of State Clinton failed to turn over a copy of a key message involving problems caused by her use of a private homebrew email server, the State Department confirmed Thursday. The disclosure makes it unclear what other work-related emails may have been deleted by the presumptive Democratic presidential nominee. The email was included within messages exchanged November 13, 2010, between Clinton and Huma Abedin. At the time, email sent from Clinton's BlackBerry device and routed through her private ClintonEmail.com server in the basement of her New York home were being blocked by the State Department's spam filter. A suggested remedy was for Clinton to obtain, get this, a state.gov email account. Her response? Let's get separate address or device, but I don't want any risk of the personal being accessible. Clinton never did use a government account that was set up for her, instead continuing to rely on her private server until leaving office. But we're not done. There's even more. A former Clinton administration diplomat who used his political sway to garner support for the Iran nuclear deal apparently was being bankrolled the entire time by Boeing, which is now set to make billions off a jet deal with Tehran now that the sanctions have been lifted. Thomas Pickering, who also served as chairman of the board examining the Benghazi attack response, which you might remember did not include an interview with Hillary, publicly pushed for the nuclear deal before its approval last year. So, Ian, lots of horrible news for Hillary. In some ways, this probably should be a second good martini for us, but her level of corruption and deception seems to know no bounds.
Goodness, no. I mean, all three of these stories, right, one after the other, it's extraordinary. I mean, I will give Hillary a little leniency on not wanting the personal stuff to get out, because really, who wants to see pictures of her in her yoga gear? I mean, that really is a horrifying prospect. And so I think she did the American people a favor in that regard. But these are, and I know I'll sound like a broken right-wing record here, but the first key thing here is this is exactly the type of thing that voters should be hearing about, that they should know about, that this woman is just wildly either paranoid or just incredibly averse to any transparency or accountability. I mean, she spent her entire time in the public light basically trying to figure out ways around public accountability. And this email scandal and the calendar are just perfect examples. They're sort of the crystallization of that impulse. Anyone disgusted by the Obama administration's, you know, most transparent administration in history promise needs to know that a Hillary Clinton administration is going to be even worse. I mean, this has been her MO her entire time in the public limelight. The second part of this, though, is that voters would only hear about it if you have a competent opposition. Trump gave what actually was not a bad speech the other day, hitting Hillary on a number of points. But you have to do that over a sustained period of time in a cogent way. You have to be able to make that case clearly and articulately again and again and again. And that takes discipline. And that's something that Donald Trump most certainly does not have. We're in this very, very frustrating position where stories like this keep coming out and are going to keep coming out because this is just sort of the way she's programmed. They should be really decisive things for anyone interested in a government that they can hold accountable, in a White House that they can hold accountable. But you have a Republican nominee who really doesn't know how to capitalize on them. So it's an extraordinarily frustrating situation for conservatives, I think.
Completely. And the idea that the guy who co-chaired the Benghazi commission was carrying her water on the Iran deal, and by that time John Kerry was Secretary of State, but the idea that he was capable of completing an objective analysis of what happened at Benghazi, even if he did have a co-chair, is laughable.
Right.
All right. On to the crazy martini now. And Ian, I guess if you just keep grabbing for stuff, ultimately you get rewarded. Corey Lewandowski, known for grabbing Michelle Fields, known for berating members of the press, including people from CNN over the past several months, now works for CNN. He was fired, in a surprise to him, apparently, early this week after the Trump children, at least the three adult children, decided they wanted him gone. So did Paul Manafort. So Corey Lewandowski is out of a job for exactly 3 days. He's now a contributor at CNN, but basically made it clear in his first paid interview that he's never going to say much that's negative about Trump because he's signed a non-disclosure agreement with Trump, meaning he can't talk about anything from behind the scenes that could possibly reflect negatively on Trump when he does his commentary. So we expect a lot of great insights from Corey over the next 4 months.
This is just such an exercise in cynicism. Anybody who, you know, over the past year or years who's complained about media cynicism or untrustworthy media looks at this and says, yep, bingo. Look, I mean, as you point out, the non-disclosure agreement makes this just a farce as far as CNN claiming, you know, he's going to be able to give us this firsthand account of the Trump campaign. I wrote about this a little bit yesterday. You know, his first post-firing interview on Monday with Dana Bash, he effectively summed up his departure as, well, things are going so well within the Trump campaign that they basically don't need me anymore. This is the guy we're expecting to give us straight talk on Donald Trump. I mean, are there maybe just a couple of indications from over the past that Corey Lewandowski might have trouble with the truth as he, you know, and his boss gaslighted the entire American public about what happened with the Michelle Field situation? It's an extraordinary exercise in cynicism, and it, what it boils down to, of course, is ratings. It has nothing to do with truth in reporting. It has nothing to do with accurate or insightful commentary. It basically has to do with CNN is in a fierce ratings battle with other major networks, and this is a way to scrape up a few more viewers who are going to turn in to see what Lewandowski has to say about his former boss. I've written about this before, but I think it's shameful by media executives, but they're only partly to blame because they're only catering to the appetites of viewers. If you want a responsible media, in part, they have to be held accountable by a viewing public that turns off the television. And right now, we don't have a viewing public that's willing to do that. So while I certainly blame Jeff Zucker for making this decision, he's also responding to the incentives that exist right now.
Ian, is it the non-disclosure that's the most odious here? Because obviously, if you've listened to Jeffrey Lord, who is, I assume, not under a non-disclosure agreement, he was the one who a week or two ago called Paul Ryan a racist for calling Donald Trump a racist. So there's people who don't have these arrangements who are clearly not going to give much objective analysis either.
Why do they need to hire a shill? They already have one who comes free. I mean, it's something that's going to spark a whole lot of viewership, at least for sort of an initial short-term period as people tune in to find out what he's going to offer, which is a claim that Jeffrey Lord can't offer. You know, secondly, and I don't want to get all, you know, conspiratorial about this simply because I don't think the Trump campaign thinks more than, say, about 30 seconds ahead of what's currently happening. But it smacks of Roger Stone's departure last fall, you know, where Stone has this weird sort of internecine falling out with the Trump campaign and then becomes basically his biggest booster. Right. CNN is perpetrating the same type of fraud, which is that Lewandowski is going to be some type of independent operator. After hiring him 72 hours after he left the campaign under an NDA agreement and after this totally obsequious interview with Dana Bash, I mean, it's just nobody is buying it.
You mentioned the fact that they're catering to their viewers. CNN has this interesting thing on their website. They've got their top story section and then their news and buzz section, which is the ones I think that people are most buzzing about and are going viral. So in the top story section, you've got Brexit. You've got Bernie Sanders saying he's going to vote for Hillary. You've got flight data recorders from the Egypt Air flight and the hiring of Corey Lewandowski, the cop being acquitted in the Freddie Gray case. Then in the news and buzz section, you've got LeBron not playing in the Olympics. You've got a $1,000 device that'll scan for body fat 3D. You've got a customer called Fatty on their receipt, what Hitler's Jewish neighbor saw, mom gets new accent after surgery, and then the videos include a cat riding a motorcycle and the world's most beautiful Instagram account. So, America, you got to do better.
I was going to say, CNN's buzzing stories, 14 hamsters that'll make you feel all the feels, give the people what they want.
We got a lot of work to do, Ian. So rest up over the weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
All right. Thanks, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today and all of next week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Have a great weekend and tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.